Now, this is Afternoon Pancakes, episode 10. My name is Jared. I'm with my good friend, Stephen Reed. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well today, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I'm refreshed coming off this this bye week. And, you know, let's just get right into it. How do I feel like the Colts won in the bye week, even though they didn't play a game?
That's because they did win in the bye week when they didn't play a game.
All three of the remaining AFC South teams, Houston, Tennessee, and Jacksonville, all lost this past weekend while the Colts were on the bye, getting their rest in, getting healthier. Everybody lost. The Colts essentially gain a game on every, or just one step closer to things normalizing. I think that's about the appropriate way to say it, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
About to normalize the AFC South. The Titans have faked the funk for the better part of a couple seasons. And in the next month or so, are going to get theirs. And I just have a feeling. You know, I wonder, much like how the Colts are not quite as good without Anthony Costanzo, I wonder what if it's the same with the Titans without Taylor Lewan.
I mean, it could be. Like, he was a significant part of that roster. I mean, he was, you know, Pro Bowl left tackle. He's, you know, anchor of that offensive line. And right. Then you lose that, like with the Colts, when they lost Anthony Costanzo, it was rough. You know, the Colts really struggled. And it didn't help they went up against an elite pass rusher with Myles Garrett that week. But right. With the Titans losing Taylor Lewan and also losing the game to the Steelers, it was a little bit of a double whammy for them. And then right. You've got the Colts coming up. Colts play the Titans in the next 5 weeks. I think the Colts schedule is something like lie at the Lions, home against the Ravens, home against the Packer, home against the Titans, maybe. I know they play the Titans twice in there, the Packers, the Ravens, and the Lions. I know it's like Lions, Ravens, and then I'm not sure where it goes from there. Maybe at Tennessee, Packers.
We're about to find out. Yeah. No, it's Lions, Ravens, Titans, Packers, Titans.
Yeah, I was like, and it's at Tennessee, home against the Packers, home against the Titans. And so you're going to see what these teams are made of. The Colts really got a blessing to have their bye when they did, given mm-hmm. their injury situation. Yep. You had Michael Pittman come back to practice today. Darius Leonard was back at practice today. You also had Kamoko Touré, which is a guy that the coaching staff and all of us fans are really high on prior to him getting injured again. So we're going to be really excited to see what this team can really put together going into next week here in Detroit, and see if they can string some wins together, and if they can come out of this stretch here of five games with four wins, they're going to be well on their way.
Oh, yeah.
Because that means at very least they split against the Titans. You got to feel like the Titans are going to drop another game somewhere down the line.
Right.
And so I don't know where they might drop that game, but you feel like they're going to drop another game at some point. And so, yeah, I think the Colts are in a great position, even though they're not really at the spot that we thought they would be. Because going into this part of the season, I think we both thought that they would be a little bit better off.
Yeah, I think anybody would have said, you know, T.Y. would have been a bigger part of the offense. You know, you have Marlon Mack with Taylor spelling Mac, right?
So here, let me run down the Titans' next games, because the Titans had their bye week effectively week four because they're idiots. and like when you look at the season so far, the Titans, they haven't really, aside from Pittsburgh, they really haven't played a lot of great teams. You know, they played the Broncos, they played the Jaguars, and only won by three against Jacksonville. They only won by one against Minnesota. They won by two against Denver. They absolutely crushed the Bills in that game. They won by six against the Texans. They lost by three against Pittsburgh. They've been playing all these really, really tight games. I kind of think that the Titans are going to kind of come back to earth, because if you look at their next six games, they're not easy, and they don't get a break. They've got the Bengals, which, you know, can give you fits if you're not ready for them. I mean, shoot, the Colts found that out in week six. They've got the Bears, who are a legitimate defense. You've got the Colts, and then on Thursday Night Football, so that kind of is a bit of a stumble for a bad kind of situation for the Colts. Then they play the Ravens again, and then the Browns. So that's not an easy six game stretch there. And so I'll be interested to see how they come out. Now, at the end of that, they're looking at Jacksonville. Their last four games are Jacksonville, Detroit, Green Bay, and Houston. So three of those last four games are probably going to be wins for them pretty easily. But these next six games, it could pretty easily see the Titans going 3-3.
Right. Which, I mean, still makes them 11-5, but the reality, though, like you said, I think they have overachieved, which is so crazy to say somebody from Nashville overachieved.
Like, they've gotten lucky. It's hard for me to say they've gotten lucky. They have gotten lucky, but they've also they're very well coached. And so you've got Mike Vrabel, who I openly said I questioned whether he had the experience to really be a head coach. He's turned into a great head coach there. But you saw how he played the end of the Houston game, where he manipulated the rules and subbed an extra player in to run off clock not to run off clock, but to give himself an extra timeout.
Right.
To stop the clock, because too many men on the field stops the clock versus any other penalty would keep it running. And then he feigned anger and being upset at the players and doing all that. And I looked at that and I go, that's a really brilliant coaching strategy. Slightly crooked, given his coaching tree. I'm not surprised. But you know, it's one of those things where it's brilliance in the same thing, because he's not breaking the rules. He's just using the way they're written to his advantage, which sounds a whole lot like another Patriots organization employee.
Right. So it's kind of one of those things where
it's very Belichickian.
You see another team doing it and you're like, oh, obviously it's one of Belichick's guys. I would rather, it seems a lot more plausible to me that it's like dumb luck, or like rather he, you know, it's like he really did sub in a 12th man and then he really was mad at him when he got a penalty. And then they also won the game. You know what I mean? Like the outcomes are so dependent on each other that it almost doesn't feel like it's real. Like it was intentional. Like it was in the moment. You know what I mean?
And you watch him smirk. And that's the best part about that whole scenario, is you watch him smirk and you see him go and send the guy out, and one of the defensive backs, the defensive players, like, what is he doing out here? And like looks over the sideline, and Vrabel just like puts his hand up saying, you know, no, don't worry, I got this. stay on. And then right. all of a sudden he's out there and you're like, oh man, that's kind of crazy. That was really smart. It's really, but like what's frustrating for Colts fans is, you know, now seeing how terrible the Jaguars are dropping that first game is becoming more and more inexplicable for the franchise.
Yeah, and I think for Tennessee, you know, their defense has clearly overperformed and is due to come back to earth, as is their offense, really. They got decent weapons, but the level of play is hard to sustain. And like you said, you really haven't played anybody, played a lot of close games, and that does wear on you. And that's not to say, like, you can't win a championship unless you're blowing everybody out. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, like,
you
have to have some games. Like, the Colts have had some games where they put teams away early, and it's a different type of game, you know. And also, the Colts don't lie down for anyone, and that's, you know, that goes right back to, you know, just a couple weeks ago against the Bengals when you're down 21-0, and just like I told you, when
sure
they
felt
kicked
like
that
they
field
lied
goal
down to start.
Yeah, it sure felt like they laid down to start, but like I said, when Nugent kicked a field goal with about 8 minutes left in the second quarter, it was over, and it was a 24-0 game, or 24-7 at that point, or something like that, and I was like, oh, this game's over. Colts are gonna win this game. Watch. It's just a feel, you know, this game is such a feel thing. We kind of joke about how wide the margins feel between a lot of the teams. And then you watch the games, you know, we talked all week about, for example, in terms of that Bengals game, we talked on our podcast and I said how the Bengals were the bottom quarter in the NFL in a lot of categories. And that I really felt like the Colts had the upper hand on both offense, defense, special teams. The Colts are just a better coached team. And they started the game down 21-0. And the difference between a well-coached, competitive football team and all these other teams in the NFL is the Colts won that game. And I think that there are quite a few teams in the NFL that if you start a game down 21-0, guys are quitting at halftime, locker room's kind of iffy, right? Coming out flat in the second half, you know, sit on your haunches, lose that game 28 to 10 or something. And the Colts turned the ship around right quick. And I don't know, 4-2 doesn't sound so terrible when you consider they played the Bears, the Browns. Like, that's a couple good teams. That keep in mind,
I think the frustrating part though is that those are the only really two good teams they played.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's what gets me is realistically the Colts should be 5-1, because had they even shown up in half capacity to play the Jaguars, they would have won that game. And they still had an opportunity to win that game.
Right.
It's and the same thing with the Browns is if Anthony Costanzo plays, I think the Colts win that game probably by the same score, but in reverse. The Colts 32-23 kind of thing. Phillip Rivers in that game gave them 9 points literally. In a pick six and a safety that were both just inexplicable throws that he made. And that ended up being the difference in the game. And so when the Colts are playing with such razor thin margins against good teams, it really puts the defense in a bind to have to make a play. And when they don't, they put a lot of pressure on themselves to try to get out of that hole and to be perfect. And I think that's the problem is I think they really need to open things up a little bit on offense. We talked about this a little bit last week in how the Bengals game, the second, third, fourth quarters the Bengals game really showed how, if the Colts opened up that offense, how well they can play and how well they can do, and they can put points on the board. It's something that they have to do. Especially against a team this week, like the Lions, who are coming off a big win for them. I think they're on a 2-game win streak right now, which might be the longest win streak in the past 20 years for them. And so it's one of those things where the Colts really need to come to play this week. And if they don't, then you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And, you know, again, when I look week to week and I look at my upcoming opponent, I look at the numbers, especially the farther you get into the season, I think the numbers paint a pretty clear picture. And just to give everybody a heads up, defensively, the Detroit secondary is really good at the point of attack, right? So really good at limiting yards after the catch. They give up almost a full yard more per play, though, than the Colts, which is not a good, that's not a good statistic. That's a really bad statistic. And ultimately, our bottom of the league in a lot of important categories. They allow a good catch percentage, but they're just good tacklers. They create a lot of pressure on the quarterback, but they don't get home. And that bodes well for the Colts, because the Colts are good at protecting the quarterback and the Lions aren't very good at getting to the quarterback. They're like getting in the area, right? They're getting to the launch pad. They're just not getting home. I think they've only got 8 sacks through their 6-7 games, whatever. And then offensively, the reality is that the Lions did not have a true number one running back. They're kind of been running back by committing. Don't really have anyone that's their bell cow, which just means they huck it a lot. And Matt Stafford's been hucking it a lot for a long time. And I like Matt Stafford. I feel bad that franchise has been so poorly run for so long, because I felt like he could have done more. But I did notice he's 27th in completion percentage. So it's not all roses for the guy. 10 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Let me see how he's doing. Yeah, down there, about 21st in the league. Lower getting to, you know. He's faded a little bit this year, frequently considered like a top 10 quarterback, a lot like Philip Rivers. Both these guys have started off the season pretty rocky. This is not a good matchup for Matt Stafford. This, however, I think is a great matchup for Philip Rivers, because like it feels like, and I'll have to watch more film, but it feels like the Lions play off coverage and give up the catch, much like the Colts did or have been known to do. The Colts have been known to allow the underneath catch and then just make the play, right? That's the goal. The Lions, that's how they play defense, because you can see it in the numbers. They allow a higher catch percentage. They just don't allow a lot of yak. That tells you what exactly kind of coverage they're playing. But it's another, you know, just a nice contest, knowing that darkness awaits, right? Like, you know, you got to play the Ravens, you know, you got to play the Packers, and then you got to play your division rival 2 times in 3 weeks. You know, that's the month after the Lions, right? So while obviously you don't want to look ahead on anyone, right? This is a game against a 500 team, right? And so, and from my perspective, this is one of those trap games, because you have more difficult tasks ahead. Winning this game is very good for you for going to the playoffs and playoff seeding and all that. It's the games after that are the real tests for the franchise. But so far, we can really break the six games down as the Colts have played four bad teams, they're 3-1, and two good teams, they're 1-1. And on Sunday, they play a middling team. Middling to bad. Middling to slightly below average.
I think ultimately what's going to happen is if the Colts jump out on the Lions early, it's going to be a great game for the Colts. If they sit there and play off coverage and let Matt Stafford get into a groove, right, it's going to be a tight game. And the Colts are 50-50 in those right now. Like they're able to come back against the Bengals, but they lost against the Browns. They lost against the Jaguars. They won against the Bears. So I guess I was right. They are 50-50 of those games.
Right. And like I said, they're similar vibes for me between the how I felt going to the Bengals game, how I feel going to the Lions game, where if you just look at the easiest thing to read is numbers, and you look at the numbers and you say, oh, the Colts defense is top in the NFL in a lot of categories, and the Lions are middle of the league to the bottom of the league in a lot of categories in defense. And then on offense, of course, the teams are kind of closely related, right? They similar output. But that bodes well for the Colts because that puts the Colts in a lot more situational football, which the Colts play situational football well. And I with all the good things going on for the Colts, right, all of the players coming back this week that we want to jump in and talk about, Michael Pittman coming back and practicing today, could get Darius Leonard back, could get Kamoka Touré back. It feels like I actually, now that I think about it, it's probably more like a 10-point game, all things considered, going into Sunday, coming off a bye. If you think about how much more mental preparation the Colts do, getting healthier and getting that time, if it just all signs point to like a pretty smooth victory, and that what you really got to have is games that you are considered the better team, right? You really need to win those games because there's games coming where it don't look good, and those games are very difficult to win. Games that you aren't supposed to, right? So you got to win the ones that you should. This feels like a game the Colts should win because they're better. And they're not only better, but they're getting healthier. And they're not only getting healthier, they're getting like probably their best wide receiver and best defensive player back. Is that fair in terms of the production?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that – I think they're definitely getting their they're getting – a top two defensive player back with Darius Leonard
Buckner
this week. And I would put Buckner as number one. Yeah. And I would put Kamoka Touré in the top, five or six defensive players. Because even though he hasn't played as much, I think he's probably more effective based on his speed and explosiveness at rushing the passer than, Danico Autry or Ben Vanagoo at this point. He might be even more effective than Justin Houston. Last season before he broke his ankle, he was the most productive pass rusher, according to multiple stats, in terms of pressure percentage and sack percentage. And so I'd say that Kamoko Ture and Darius Leonard are just huge, huge, huge additions if they're able to play. I think Leonard will play. I'm not sure about Ture. I think he might still be like a week or so out. It might be just more getting back to practice at this point. Michael Pittman, I wouldn't say he's the best receiver that they have. I still think that T.Y. Hilton is the best receiver they have, even though he hasn't shown it. And you've obviously got some concerns with him and what he's doing and what he's done thus far this season, or what he hasn't done this far this season. Might be more accurate. You've got good options there with Marcus Johnson, again, showing out and given the opportunity. Zach Pascal is reliable as ever. I still think T.Y. is probably their best wide receiver, but Michael Pittman probably steps in and is number two right away. And that helps everybody down the roster. It helps not only T.Y. Hilton, it helps Marcus Johnson, because now he's going into the slot. He's going into a position where they can move him around. It helps Zach Pascal because he's not relied upon to necessarily be that. It helps the tight ends quite a bit because it brings coverage off of them, so then they're able to roam free. And that's how delicate an NFL roster is in terms of your top guys. Is if you lose one, it has such a trickle down effect to the rest of the roster and how defensive play you, that it makes such a huge difference in the outcome of the game just by one player, which I think is incredible given, how many players are on a football field at a time, just how one player being out or being injured, it can really dramatically affect the rest of the offense, rest of the defense.
Yeah. And I think if you look at the Colts, this past week or two here, our own Chris Shepard, the Sherpa, wrote a conspiracy article that kind of had the Colts fan community kind of up in arms because of its plausibility. And I like to add to that with my own conspiracy theory. It's not really even a conspiracy. It's just exactly what I think is happening. If you look at the couple few weeks of success that Mo Alie-Cox had, where even Pro Football Focus, which couldn't find its way out of a wet paper bag, noticed how well Mo Alie-Cox was playing, and the film looked like it. He passed the eyeball test and a number test. And similarly with Hines, right? Hines has had these games where he's returned kicks, he's dynamic part of the offense, he's all over the field in the passing game, and hell, he can even run the ball too, right? And then all of a sudden they disappear for weeks at a time. Not only is it injury, right, but it's not so much injury as it is the coaching staff saying, like, look at these numbers these guys put up when they're healthy. Let me just take them off the table until we really need them, right? Find out as much as we can about, for example, with Hines. Once they realize how dynamic Hines is and what plays are good for him, now they say, now we know the answer there. Let's find out the answer on this Taylor kid. So let's get him a bunch of touches and let's see if he can figure it out and see if he can be, take it to the next level, right? And then you just keep going down the line, right? Like, for example, one of the conversations that we've had, right? And remember, I keep pointing this out. If we're talking about it on our podcast, what do you think's happening in that room full of professionals with data scientists, right? So you think it's weird when I point it out on a podcast when I'm like, hey, think about Jordan Wilkins and how effective a runner he is, right? But you would never find that out if Nyheim Hines is still getting his 15 touches a game. So yeah, I do think it really happens. And I think they get nicked up. And I think that there's a difference between like injured and like the guy just got a little banged up and the coaches said, you know what, look at how effective he is when he's healthy, let's just shut him down. It's early, we got some other players we need to figure out, we need to get some tape on them so we figure out what to do with them, right? Just shut him down for a little while. Mo Alie-Cox and Nyheim Hines, I'm gonna keep saying their names and say like, hey, it's conspiracy theory because I don't have any hard evidence to back that up, but to me it almost makes sense where, like I said, injured or not, You get enough tape on a player, and you're like, you know what? I kind of can let you ride the bench. You know what I mean? We know these plays work when you're in there. Let me go find out what I got in these other players, and then try to put it all together as you go. And then you get into the playoffs, and then hopefully, my hope is the Colts call plays in the playoffs like they do when they're losing.
Right.
They just do it the whole game. And I get maybe it really does come down to the quarterback and the difference at quarterback that I've noticed over the last 3 years, right? Phillip Rivers this year, you know, Jacoby last year, Andrew Luck the year before that. And I noticed a lot more similarity between Luck and Rivers in that they're not afraid to put the ball 10 or more yards down the field during a drive, right? Whereas you see far too many dump offs with Jacoby. The good news for the Colts is as they continue to get healthier and build more rapport, think about going through a scripted practice and you have T.Y. and Pittman as your 1 and 2. Marcus Johnson, who's been playing very well, gets a lot of reps at 3. And then those guys have been healthy now and playing together, right? And the more that happens in a season, the more you're going to have success on Sunday, right? Because I keep pointing out to people, man, think about Phillip Rivers signing with the Colts and then the draft, right? So think about the and then they show up to Colts training camp, and who do you think he's throwing a whole lot of balls to? T.Y. Paris and Michael Pittman, right? And then two of those three guys, they've all three been basically injured so far this year. And once you get all three of those players back, and I can't wait for that, right? Just to have 22 mm-hmm. of 22 out on the field. So yeah, I think, you know, this is a plus matchup for the Colts in that you are better than this team, and that's why I say it's also a trap, right? Because you have a rough road ahead, so you tend to overlook teams like the Lions. If I didn't think the Colts were so mentally well, like I still think we have a ways to go in game coaching. I think that there's an awful lot of decisions that have to be made, one. And two, it's never perfect, right? You always leave a decision or two out there that you wish you'd have made differently. But as far as mental preparation, I feel like there is no one better, because the Colts' second half adjustments feel like it completely changes the dynamic of the game completely. And when they get it right, they tend to control the game from start to finish. And I would say Minnesota, Chicago, the Jets, there was like those three wins in a row. They controlled the game from start to finish. This would be another game where you'd like to see the Colts control the game from start to finish, get the production out of the guys, you know, get everybody their touches, and get out of here clean. Knowing the more I think about it, it's like putting a lump in my throat. It's like, actually, the next like 5-6 weeks are your whole season.
I mean, not to put extra pressure or anything on anybody, you know.
I mean, they're multimillionaires. It might as well be real with them. You know what I mean? The last 4 games of your season are cupcakes. You know, you really are making all your money in the next 5-6 weeks, and it's tough, and you're not going to win them all. I could promise you that if the Colts win their next 6 games, that's like legendary on its own, right? So it's probably not going to happen. But you have to, it starts with games like this. And, you know, the Colts' whole mantra is that 1% better every day, 1-0 every day, right? And I have this feeling that the Colts are well prepared, and I think they know ultimately the Lions don't have a run game to speak of. They're 100% reliant on Stafford carrying them, and the Colts just happen to be really good playing like coverage. Like they're really good at playing specifically what the Lions have to do to win. Right? Am I saying that right? Like it plays into one of the Colts' major strengths. Right. The similarities, though, between the Colts and Lions are also striking. Right. Their defenses get a lot of pressure. So I know a lot of Colts fans are like, man, I don't know about this Colts pass rush. It can always be better, friends. But the data says they're pretty good. Both teams are pretty good at creating pressure. The problem is actually making the sack, actually getting home and both teams have struggled. So obviously the onus is on one of the defenses to get home. And then on offense, similarly, the Colts have shown they're capable of running the football, and have the right pieces in the right spots, right? There aren't question marks, right? You know exactly who your third down back is. You know who your goal line back is. You know what I mean? Like, then you have your pass catcher, your little Sproles, in Hines. The Lions don't have as defined roles at running back, which when your backfield's muddy, it makes you a lot easier to defend because teams aren't nearly as concerned about stuff in the box and being prepared to eat the run, right? They're not nearly as worried about that. They know that, you know, you need to cover these pieces, these wide receivers. If you do that, you're just going to make it very difficult for them to get drives going. And when you're playing against a team that is predicated on moving the ball through the air, and you play well in those passing downs, and then you turn around and you're able to do what you're keeping your opponent from doing, right? So that's actually, now that I think about it, that's exactly how this game is shaping up, right? The Lions are going to try to pass to win, and they're just going to give the ball back to the Colts, who are going to march the ball down the field and score and win the time of possession game. Because I don't think the Lions will be able to run the ball effectively against the Colts. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion that if the Colts are going to seed anything defensively, it's going to be through the air.
It's kind of been their MO the whole time.
Yeah. If you're going to beat the Colts, your receivers have to play like OBJ and Landry. And make God catches. That's the only way is to play out of your shorts. Because trying to run the ball, you know, establish the run, teams like the Lions aren't capable. They don't have the pieces for that. And then I do think the following week against the Ravens, they're in a similar spot where the difference is at quarterback, where Lamar Jackson can just do it all by himself. I don't necessarily think he has great pieces around him other than one wide receiver and a tight end, right? But like outside of that, like not great running backs. But anyway, that's a week ahead. But yeah, so I think we pretty much hammered into the ground the fact that barring some crazy things happening, Colts coming off a bye and getting healthier, that Colts have a better record, statistically better in an awful lot of areas, makes it pretty difficult to see anything but a Colts win, kind of no matter how you slice it. Then we kind of want to talk about the trade deadline. There's some interesting players on the market. Some injuries to quarterbacks have caused some teams to go in search of the next player. You think the Colts are a player here at all?
No.
It's just not the forest.
It's not that there's nothing for us, but it's I just don't see Chris Ballard really giving up much to go get anybody. That's the thing is, you know, maybe, you know, a team like, for example, the Lions want to unload Kenny Golladay before his price tag goes up in the offseason. Maybe they can get a third round pick from him, which would be higher than what they would get as a compensatory pick if he walks. You know, there are certainly guys that are going to be on the trade block. Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle of the New York Jets, is rumored to be on the trade block. And even though the Colts just signed, you know, obviously traded for and signed DeForest Buckner, I would love to get Quinnen Williams to play next to DeForest Buckner, because that would be an absolutely unstoppable defensive line for the next 2 to 3 years. Yeah. And so, but I wouldn't want to give up anything more than like a round 4 pick for him. You know, there were rumors a couple weeks ago of Sam Darnold maybe being available from the Jets. And what throws a little bit of a hiccup on that is the subsequent rumor of Trevor Lawrence saying that if the Jets have the number one pick, he's going to stay in school. Which I think is funny. Don't necessarily blame him as a quarterback. No. Your career can last until you're 40 if you get in the right situation, and the New York Jets are almost never the right situation.
The New York Jets are never the right situation.
Well, it just depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for like a sustainable winning franchise that can keep you, you know, happy your rest of your life, then they are not the organization for you. One of the rumors that we saw from somebody that throws spaghetti against the wall was that the Dallas Cowboys might be looking to acquire Jacoby Brissett from the Colts after Andy Dalton just went down this past week against Washington. And obviously Dak Prescott is out for the year. So Jacoby Brissett would give them at least like a lifeboat. That doesn't make a lot of sense for either team, in my opinion, unless Dallas decided to trade away something higher than, you know, a round 3 pick for it. I just don't see Chris Ballard moving on from Jacoby Brissett, because Jacob Eason, despite him being on the roster this entire season, he's never really had a snap of live action in the NFL. He's still got a ways to go in terms of the mental reps and really just reps, period, in an NFL system. And so that's one of those things where I just don't see Chris Ballard making that move unless it's something that he just can't turn down. Like if Dallas, for whatever reason, offers their round 2 pick, which given how well they've played recently, it's hard for me to say, but the crazy thing is the Dallas Cowboys right now, I think have like, I have to go check and maybe you can do it for me. But they've got something like 1 win on the season.
Yeah.
And their 1 came out of their division. and so
you basically don't have to invest much to win.
No. 2-5. Let me rephrase. They have 2 wins and they're half a game out of their division, because the Eagles have a tie in there. So the Eagles have that half game on them. So Dallas, if they really want to push for the playoffs and they want to make that happen, they could make a trade for, you know, Fitzmagic down in Miami was one of the rumors. And then also Jacoby Brissett. I think you're far more likely to get Ryan Fitzpatrick from the Miami Dolphins, and probably for cheaper than what you would be able to get Jacoby Brissett from the Colts. It's one of those rumors that you really have to take with a grain of salt. And I honestly think there's no truth to it whatsoever. And right. Because it's just so outlandish on so many levels, because the Cowboys, unless Jerry Jones really, really wants to try to make the playoffs, Jacoby Brissett could lead them to the playoffs in that division.
A serious question. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones trades for Jacoby. Is Jacoby the best quarterback in the NFC East?
I'd still put Carson Wentz But Jacoby is definitely right in the conversation for the number two. Because I don't think Daniel Jones is markedly better. And Washington doesn't really have a quarterback
right
at this point. So I would, you might say that he would be the third best quarterback in the NFC East to Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts. Both with the Eagles. That's a really good question. And I'd have to say that he'd at least be number two in that scenario.
And Carson Wentz
turns the ball over like crazy. Like, people don't understand that.
Yeah, that's
he's reckless with the ball.
That's kind of what I was getting at is.
I would say Jacoby Brissett is the safest quarterback of that group.
Yeah,
I don't know if I would call him the best.
That's what I was saying. I was thinking, okay, well, how about this? Who gives you the most wins from here out if Jacoby goes to
I think if Jacoby goes to the Cowboys with the weapons that they have, and they've got a decent offensive line, they've got an elite running back with Ezekiel Elliott, they've got elite wide receivers in Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup. They've got a decent tight end. It's one of those things where if Jacoby Brissett went there, I think he really could excel in that situation. And it would be a good situation for him going into next year when he might be looking for a contract. That's why I don't think the Colts give him up for anything less than a third round pick. And that's super steep for a quarterback, but it's not unheard of. I mean, shoot, Sam Bradford, when he was with the Eagles, the Vikings lost their quarterback at the beginning of the season, and they traded a first round pick. I think it was like a first and a third for Sam Bradford. And so I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for them to, for the Cowboys to trade a round three pick, maybe even a round two pick for Jacoby Brissett, if it gives them an opportunity to make the playoffs. Because that playoff money is pretty good. And you have to consider that you expect Dak Prescott to be your quarterback next year. So this is a one-year rental to get your team in a position to make the playoffs and do it. So it just depends on how much publicity Jerry Jones wants. So that tells me he's going to trade like two round one picks because he loves publicity.
Right.
But it's an interesting hypothetical. And the one thing that would concern me as a Colts fan is how beloved Jacoby Brissett is in that locker room. And there is some concern that trading him would upset that balance. Now, at the same time, I think that the locker room itself kind of flipped on him at the end of last season. He was the locker room guy. He was the leader. And then when he started just making mistakes and missing, and it was blatantly obvious to even you and I that there was something wrong there in terms of him going and being long-term answer. And you heard it in people's answers after the games. So it's one of those things where it was you saw it after the games where people wouldn't directly say that it was his fault, but it was definitely very strongly implied.
Right.
It's one of those questions that is, how much sway does Jacoby Brissett have in the locker room? Yeah, he led everybody with the Black Lives Matter, with all that. But now that seems like it's being more overtaken by the entire organization as a whole.
Right.
Versus just one player. So that's one of those questions where I'm kind of torn on it, because we've always heard that he's such a great locker room guy and moving him might upset the balance, but would it rock the boat as much as we think it would because of how strong the locker room is on its own now?
Right. And what I was just sitting here thinking about, like, okay, it's improbable that what the Colts would want for Jacoby they could get from Dallas in this example. What about, and I'm just spitballing, Amari Cooper for Jacoby? Is that doable for both parties?
I think the problem with that trade is the salary cap implications for Dallas. I'm not sure what their cap issue or their cap situation is this year. But I know that they've got some issues on the horizon, especially if they want to extend Dak Prescott. They've got a bunch of money tied up in Amari Cooper. So it's actually not, it's not a bad idea. Which, as Jared will tell you, is actually a really good compliment coming from me to say that it's not a bad idea.
Because Amari's making $10 million, right? So it does have a negative cap implication for the Colts because they are paying $20 million, $21 million for Jacoby. So they'd be eating $11 million in cap. But this, for me, the reason I say it like that is, first of all, I don't
the Colts need a wide receiver one
into re-signing Jacoby. How do I say this? What I want out of a quarterback Jacoby does not have. So I would rather get something for him. I don't think that I'm going to get the pick I want for him. So I want a number one overall wide receiver. Everybody acknowledges T.Y. is getting a little older. He needs to play a little more slot, be a little more gadgety to keep his wheels, right? Let these young guys play more downs and catch the balls in traffic and get hit and stuff like that. I see him as the 18th highest paid player in the NFL. So there's no way that's going to happen. So now that I look at how much he's getting paid, I don't know that the Colts would make a move. I'm assuming they're hoping T.Y. Hilton just steps up, right, and starts to perform.
Not only that is you have to look beyond T.Y. because clearly T.Y. is at the twilight of his career. You've seen it last year. He started to slow down. You've seen it this year where he's just not able to get open when they put press coverage on him. Mm-hmm. And so getting an elite wide receiver like an Amari Cooper is, I think that's a pretty good idea, is to see if that they'll bite. Because if they're looking to get Dak Prescott re-signed next year, they want to make the playoffs. You've still got CeeDee Lamb. You've still got Michael Gallup. You've still got Ezekiel. You've still got a decent offensive line, decent to pretty good offensive line. So you're still giving Jacoby Brissett options and giving him weapons. And if you're not intending to keep Amari Cooper beyond this year, then that makes sense for Dallas to try to get what they can for him now and still give him an opportunity to make the playoffs.
Right. I mean, I obviously throwing darts at a dart or dartboard, so it's not like I planned that conversation out, but yeah, I was just thinking about what does Dallas have. Obviously, I would want Dallas to trade Dak for Jacoby and give the Colts a pick, because Dak is an unknown now. And then the Colts have the option to re-sign Phillip Rivers, wait for Dak to come back from surgery, see what he looks like, even re-sign Phillip Rivers, probably at a discount, let Dak ride the bench until he's healthy. Because once he comes back, I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I didn't think he was long for Dallas. Now I don't know. With the injury, man, injuries can change a lot of things. Just like we said, it makes teams make moves. And of course, I'm selfishly interested, so I'd like to see Amari Cooper in a Colts uniform. That'd be nice.
Here's going to be your issue with Amari is he carries a dead cap hit of $40 million.
Oh.
If he's cut. I'd have to check to see what it would cost if he's traded, because I didn't realize they had just extended him for 5 years, $100 million. Good for him. So, but the signing bonus though was only $10 million. So that would mean that his cap hit would only accelerate the signing bonus. So it would be an $8 million cap hit on them if they traded him after this year, because he's already been paid. And so the $40 million is in the guarantees that go out after this next year. So next season he's a $22 million cap hit.
Okay.
He's got a $20 million base salary for the next 4 years, $10 million base salary this year. And so I'd be interested to see if they, and that's according to SportTrack. And so, yeah, that's
okay. By the way, did you see
Dallas has $29 million in cap space though.
So they could make a move.
Yeah. They could make a move. The Colts, on the other hand, only have $11 million in cap space.
So they don't really have a lot they can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could. Like honestly, because they're not going to sign much of anybody else at this point. I think that they could make a deal if they really wanted to. And don't forget that the Jacoby contract would swap over as well. And so it's not just the Colts taking on Amari Cooper. It would be the Colts also getting rid of Jacoby Brissett. So they would be taking off the base salary, $6 million, signing bonus, $5.5 million. Colts would be they'd be moving $6 million off of their cap, basically. And so they'd have $17 million. They could take on the rest of Amari Cooper's salary. Because at this point, the Jacoby Brissett cap hit's already guaranteed on it. So he's going to get hit there anyway.
Right.
And so they'd only be effectively adding about $4 million to their cap this year because of the difference between the two base salaries.
There you go. So it ends up not being that bad. So I don't feel so bad. Initially, I kind of, after thinking about it, I'm like, man, that's actually kind of dumb. It's not that close. And it's like, nah, it's actually not that bad. And it's all mostly due to salaries. But I was just thinking of a way Dallas could improve technically. And the Colts could improve technically, right? Swap a quarterback they're not playing for wide receiver they could use. But yeah. Now we kind of chatted about the trade deadline. You want to talk about who we think's going to win the games this week and get out of here?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a great plan to me.
Okay. With that said, tomorrow or today, by the time this is published, the Atlanta Falcons play at the Carolina Panthers. Steven, who do you think wins that game?
I think that's a Panthers W right there.
I agree. I believe this is Run DMC's week back. Run CMC. And then on Sunday, the Patriots play at the Bills. Who do you think wins that game?
The Bills, please.
Cam Newton is awful.
They benched him. They played Jared Stidham last week.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I think the Bills can absolutely win this game. The Tennessee Titans.
Hold on. Let me say something really quickly. So my favorite thing is Colts fans who, Philip Rivers, after he has a rough game, they throw out this thing about Cam Newton. And, oh, well, the Colts paid Philip Rivers $25 million, and they could have had Cam Newton for pennies. Mm. And I'm like, Cam Newton had the same shoulder surgery that Andrew Luck did, basically. It's the same shoulder injury that Andrew Luck did. And, Cam Newton has a noodle arm right now because he is 2 years out of this injury, or a year, year and a half out of this injury, and he's not fully healed. Not only that, but he also had major foot issues, which is just kind of weird how similar their injuries have been, but right. You see what Cam Newton is now, and he's, there are times where he is great but more often than not, he's mediocre at best. And so please, Colts fans, stop with this narrative of they should have signed Cam Newton for less rather than Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers gave the Colts the best opportunity to win at the moment that they needed him. So please just leave it be. Just let that rest. Okay, sorry. Next game.
And let's not forget, just to drive the nail into the coffin, Cam Newton was 2-3 and had 2 touchdowns and 7 interceptions before he was benched. So, no, the Colts couldn't have had Cam Newton because they would never have paid him any money to play quarterback. He's done. His career is effectively over.
I'm not saying he's done, but he needs more time to recover.
Which frequently in the NFL means you're not going to get that time, right? You're gonna, they're gonna move right past you. The NFL.
You're not always on franchises that will give you a 2-year vacation and pay you $27 million to walk away before you come back after 2 years being away and getting healthy.
Right. The Titans play at the Bengals. Who do you think wins that game?
I think it's Teen Titans. Go.
You know, I think...
I want the Bengals to win. I think the Titans will win.
I think you're right. I think the Titans win, but I will say this. I think that when you have a start of a game like the Bengals did against the Colts, that it can have an adverse effect in that it never happens again.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be a great moment of growth for a team when they understand
get out in front of the Titans. I don't think the Titans, the Steelers got out on top of the Titans and they just kind of like let their foot off the gas.
Yeah.
I don't think the Bengals would do that twice if they got out in front.
Yeah. So it's a learning moment. It's a learning, a teachable moment, right? When you have been up 3 touchdowns on a team that's like straight better than you, and you gave up that, effectively you gave up a game you should have won. I just think that if there was a team that you were gonna kind of expose, because if you really think about Tennessee, as long as you can keep Tannehill in the pocket, keep Henry under wraps, They have Brown, and that's really about it. It's not. They're very thin at wide receiver, the Titans. And if the Bengals can just keep a hold of Henry, make it real difficult on third down. And like we said, get out in front, stay out in front, and they've shown they can do it. So. With that being said, the Raiders play at the... looks like a pretty good football game. The Raiders play at the Cleveland Browns. Who do you think wins that game?
I'm going to go with the Browns, even though they just lost Odell Beckham for the season.
Yeah. I want to say that his loss will motivate them. And I have little to no faith in Derek Carr. Man, this now more I think about it, I'm like, I'm in love with everything but the quarterbacks in these games. I think the Raiders get an upset win on the road. And then the Vikings.
I just don't think that the Raiders can compete with the Cleveland defense. Like, I don't think they can stop Myles Garrett. Kind of period.
Well, there you go. Hey, you put your foot down.
12 sacks. 12 sacks for Myles Garrett in this game.
The Minnesota Vikings play at the Green Bay Packers. Who do you think wins that game?
I would say the Green Bay Packers.
I agree with you. Man.
Oh, thanks.
Disappointing, Minnesota. And then...
Really? Yeah. That's what happens when you trade one of your most explosive offensive players.
Right. Like, you have your great possession receiver, you have a great running back, you have a great defense, you trade your best playmaker.
Yep.
Okay. The Jets play at the Chiefs. Who do you think wins that game?
That's the New York Jets right there. No, shocking. Yeah. They're like 19.5-point dogs in this game. And I think you might want to take the over.
Yeah,
or take the Chiefs.
This could very easily be a shutout. And because Kansas City defense has been pretty good this year too. The Los Angeles Rams play at the Miami Dolphins. Pretty clear Rams going, I guess.
I'm going to say Rams, yeah.
Would be the first start for Tua in
Miami.
The Steelers play... Ooh, Steelers
Ravens.
This
is the game.
The game of the week.
This is the game of the week, I think. I'm going to go Steelers in this game.
I'm going to say Baltimore wins at home.
Yeah.
It's tough and to
Here's the reason why. Because I think Baltimore is soft. No, I'm just... No. Here's the reason why. I think the Pittsburgh defense, I think the Tennessee Titans last year in the playoffs gave teams the recipe to beat Lamar Jackson, or at least contain him. And right. You've seen that this year. He hasn't gone off for those MVP-type numbers. And so when you have a team that is as good defensively as Pittsburgh is, I think that they give themselves an opportunity to win this game because they're able to play Lamar Jackson in a way that makes him uncomfortable.
Hmm. Well,
that's my thoughts. I don't think it changed your mind at all, but I wanted to give everybody a reason why. Because like the obvious pick here kind of is Baltimore because it's in Baltimore.
Right.
You when you first see this game, you're like, oh, that's a Ravens win. And so that's why I wanted to put out there why I am picking the Steelers, because I think that their defense has an opportunity to win this game where I don't have a lot of faith. And I don't have as much faith in Baltimore's defense to stop the Steelers offense as opposed to having faith in Steelers defense, Pittsburgh's defense to beat Baltimore.
Fair enough. Now the Los Angeles Chargers play at the Denver Broncos. Who do you think wins that game?
I am going to go with the Chargers because I'm all on to the Herbert train.
Same. Kids got the juice. Which makes you feel
so,
bad.
So much fun to watch.
I like Drew Locke and, you know, I'm not a Bronco hater by any stretch, but I guess it is worth pointing out they are playing in Denver. It is difficult to play in altitude. Actually pretty close football game.
Was it like a 2-point spread or something like that?
I would say it's probably a close game just because it's in Denver. But yeah, on the other hand, I do really think that the Chargers are the better team. So I kind of stick with that. And then the Saints play at the Bears. Oh, another good game at 425.
I think the Saints are going to get this game.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of... The Saints pose the kind of problem the Bears can't solve for. Right? The Bears are going to be dominant in games where the offense is middling to bad.
Mm-hmm. Where you don't have a decent quarterback.
But when you're playing against, well, one of the top five, if not top three quarterbacks all time in Drew Brees, and a very explosive offense that tends to put up points, the Bears are just not good on offense.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at with this. I don't think the Bears can keep up with the Saints on offense, and I don't think the Bears' defense can stop the Saints offense enough to allow the Bears offense to keep up.
There you are. And then the 49ers play at the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, some good games.
I'm saying they're just at the 4 o'clock hole.
Yeah. Well, you had the Baltimore Steelers game and the 1 o'clock. So I'm going to go with the 49ers in this game, which is a little bit outside the box. The Seattle's coming off a bad loss to Arizona. The right. 49ers are coming off just an absolute bludgeoning last week. They just beat down I don't even remember who they played last week, but I know it was just a crushing. That's how bad it was, is I can't even recognize the other team. And I just feel like Jimmy Garoppolo there at quarterback, now that he's healthy and playing, they're able to really get that offense going. And yeah, I just feel like I have a little bit more faith in the 49ers than I do the Seattle right now.
Yeah, 49ers just beat New England 33-6 last week.
Yeah, it's a bludgeoning. Thank goodness I don't recognize the New England Patriots.
I kind of see what you're after, right? On the one hand, the Niners roll over a traditional powerhouse, right, in the Patriots.
Yeah, but Russell Wilson's so much different of a quarterback.
But, like, exactly. The Seattle just lost in overtime. So just in those two sentences, you could say one bad team, right? They trounced the bad team. And then you have this really good team that lost in overtime to a kind of an upstart.
Because the Cardinals right now are 5-2.
Yeah. And they're for real. When you're able to,
for DeAndre Hopkins, like, that, like, gave Kyler Murray, like, a legitimate option. I think Hopkins is, he's not leading the lead in receiving. He's top five.
No, I think he's a league leader.
Great job, Bill O'Brien.
But yeah, I agree with you that I think San Francisco is just in a little more of a prime position. They have more of the pieces that would make a complete team up. And then Sunday Night Football, Dallas and Philly. Who do you think wins this game?
I feel like this has got to be Philly, just because I have no faith in Dallas right now with whoever they throw. Like, they could throw me at a quarterback, and I might be better off than what they've got. I would immediately get injured, though, and go straight just to IR and collect that salary. Yeah, that salary. Because the NFL minimum would be nice to have.
Right.
You know?
I'm with you.
That makes guaranteed for injury.
Oh, and to speak about it earlier, because I meant to say something and somehow lost it and didn't say something about it. I want no part of Carson Wentz.
That's fair.
Carson Wentz is the Jekyll and Hyde version of what you want in a quarterback. Ultimately, it sucks to say it out loud, but it's just true, man. Andrew Luck was like the perfect quarterback prospect in that not only was he an exceptional athlete, but he had incredible decision-making skills. Carson Wentz, the reason that he ended up not even playing Division I football, I can tell you, it's that because as high as his highs are, he has the lowest of lows, the bonehead of bonehead. That would be the only thing that give me pause in this game at all, is that Carson Wentz is the kind of guy to light a winning lottery ticket on fire. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I see it. It's you watch him play, they're up 17-3. He throws back-to-back interceptions on back-to-back possessions in the first half, and you're thinking, like, I would never let you play again. You're winning. Like, don't put the ball at risk. It doesn't need to happen at all. And I get it. He's also had injuries, and they have no weapons. And it sounds an awful lot like if you're surrounded by a-holes all the time, maybe you are one, right? In terms of Carson Wentz. But that said, on the other hand, you know, we don't speak like that about quarterbacks, because now we're learning the hard lesson in when you don't have your franchise quarterback. How it feels looking around, right? You start to pick apart everyone else because you don't want to admit what's really going on in your house, right? As far as what's going on with the Colts with Philip Rivers. But of course, like we said, we expect that situation to improve. And I think ultimately something will change. I can't imagine Jerry Jones just giving up on a season.
Yeah, that's the tough part.
not signing anybody. Come on. So yeah, I think Philly gets a big division win at home and rests control of their division. Because on Monday night,
here's the thing: is if Dallas wins, I think Jerry Jones may make a move.
Yeah.
Because it puts them in a division lead. They put them half game up on Philly. They know that once, you know, they start getting film on, you know, the quarterback now is like their fifth round quarterback out of like Central Arkansas State or something like, I don't know. I think it's a kid out of James Madison maybe. No, seriously, it's a rookie. If they take a half game lead in this division, I could see Jerry Jones making that trade and saying, you know what, let's just go for it. Because if we can win, if we can make the playoffs, that puts our draft pick in the 20s, you know, giving up, you know, a pick in the 60s, 50s, 60s, a round two pick, then, you know, let's do it. Let's do that to make the playoffs, get that extra playoff money. You know, get this for my team and my brand. I think if they lose, that's going to put them in a tougher spot, and they might just tank it.
Which is doable, too. You may be looking at possibly having to replace Dak, right? You never know what's going to happen with his surgery. And then the reason I was saying Philly, this is a big division game for Philly and Dallas, right? Because winner kind of takes control of their division. And that's because on Monday night, the Tampa Bay Bucks play at the New York Giants. I expect Tampa to win. I'm assuming you expect Tampa to win as well. I don't think any of the remaining NFC East teams, Washington doesn't play. So yeah,
Washington's bye.
So one way or the other, they're going 1-2, basically, right? Two of them are playing against each other. One of them is playing against Tampa. So one way or the other, the NFC East is going 1-2 this week, and unless there's a tie. And then, of course, to close us out, at 1 o'clock on Sunday, the Indianapolis Colts play at the Detroit Lions. Steven, who do you think wins that game?
I think the Colts win this game, and I'll say this now. They should win it easily. This is now the third time I've said that. The first time was the Jacksonville Jaguars. The second time with the Cincinnati Bengals. And now, here again, with the Detroit Lions. I hope it's not the same outcome. I do think the Lions will give them a tougher test. I expect them to be a tougher game than what I did with those other two games going in. I think the other game I said that this should be an easy one was the Jets. And thankfully that was. If the Colts can get to Matt Stafford early in this game, I think it's going to be a long game for the Lions. Because if he starts making mistakes, they don't have the offensive firepower to really come back. The one thing that does concern me is they do have that wide receiver that Matt Stafford can just kind of throw the ball up to, and he can make circus catches. And I'm talking about Kenny Golladay. And that would be the one thing that really kind of concerns me from the Colts perspective. The offense from the Colts, they need to get the running game going. Right now, the Colts are 32nd in the league in rushing, which is mind-boggling given how much resources is spent on that offensive line. There's absolutely no reason that they should be 32nd in the league in rushing. So I think that they're going to try to get back to that game plan of running the ball down their throat against the Detroit Lions and try to really dominate the game from the line of scrimmage, really get Jonathan Taylor going, trying to get him kind of into a groove leading into this really tough stretch of games where they're going to need him a lot. And so that's kind of where my thought is on the game as a whole. I think the Colts will win. I hope it's a blowout. At this point, I'm not sure about anything when it comes to scores with the Colts.
So I'm going to use numbers because it makes more sense to me. I felt like the Colts and Bengals were really far apart. And as we've beat into the ground outside of the first quarter of that game, they were really far apart, like 31-6 far apart. I feel like the Colts and Lions are also far apart, but closer than the Colts and Bengals. And for that, I feel like it's a 3-point game, something like a 30-27 or 27-24, which seems to be pretty common. And I say that because, like you said, I think Matt Stafford's a competent quarterback, and I think he has good, like, red zone type wide receivers that bode well for scoring when you're in, like, scoring position, but that those opportunities will be limited because otherwise the Colts play shutdown defense. And I just think the Colts win because they're more consistent on offense. And that's just looking at numbers. They have bigger time of possession. They have the longer average drive. They score more frequently. They score touchdowns more frequently, which is crazy because it feels like we haven't converted in the red zone like we should. But I think that's something that you improve over the course of the season. And as I've set this week up for, I think looking ahead, this is a trap game. And I think if you have what we know we have, right? We may not know what we get on Sunday on the field, but we know what we have in house, right? And we have a great coaching staff and great trainers and great general management. Those things make your Sundays a lot easier, make your game days a lot easier. And that's one of the big reasons I think the Colts win, because they're getting healthy. Right, they're getting closer to 22 of 22, which, and when I say that, that's 22 starters, because obviously we're down two, so the best we could do is get back to 20 of 22 and be without Paris and Marlon Mack. But yeah, big game on Sunday. This has been episode 10 of Afternoon Pancakes. You can find us on Twitter, the old bird app, at Pod Pancake. And of course, if you'd like to interact with Steven or I, you can find Steven at Nice Reed, R-E-E-D, Steve. And you can find me, I am at Likely Alien. Enjoy this week's games and go Colts. We'll see you after next week's games.
Go Colts!